Thanks for joining us tonight. Allison Skaberg here. Tonight I am here with ADDA Southwest. That is the Attention Deficit Disorder Association. It was founded, oh gosh, I think it was founded back in 1986 by Pam Esser. We are a parent support group. They have support groups all across Texas for both adults that have ADHD as well as kids. So this is a family group where mostly parents join this group. We have webinars every single month. Usually, well, we do take some breaks in the summer and around the holidays and stuff like that. However, it's usually the last Tuesday of the month, and we have different speakers each month. It doesn't cost anything to join. There is a $40 membership. You can join any of our webinars. There's no charge for that. There is a $40 membership, annual membership for ADDA, which is completely optional, which is why Pam Esser founded this to begin with. But it is a wonderful organization. You're going to want to check it out. They do have a lot of meetings and annual symposiums and things like that where they have great speakers from all across the country come in. So you may want to check that out. So I want to just go through a couple of housekeeping items for a moment. First of all, our group used to meet in person. Prior to COVID, we were meeting in person. And then since COVID, we've been meeting by Zoom, which we anticipate that that will just continue on. It seems to be a better mode for most families. We are in webinar mode tonight, which means that we can't see you or hear you. And you're probably thinking, oh, thank goodness, you probably got kids running around and homework and baths and everything else going on. But we can't see you and can't hear you, but our chat box is open tonight. So we do invite you to put your questions in the chat box, and we'll get to as many of them as we can during the time that we have together. We're going for an hour tonight, so if you're planning your evening, you can plan on that. And we are excited to have Ryan Roberts with us with Level Up Life. And he is going to be talking to us about an important topic, parenting burnout, a battle plan for prevention and rejuvenation. And he is a licensed clinical mental health counselor. So we're really excited to hear from you tonight. Ryan, thank you for joining us. And having said that, I'm going to let you go deeper, talking a little bit more about who you are and your organization. And we look forward to hearing what you have to say. So again, guys, don't forget, put your questions in the chat box and we'll get to them as we can. Thank you.
Absolutely. I'm Ryan Roberts. I'm a therapist, and a lot of my specialties focus on crisis, trauma, and ADHD and executive functioning. And because of that, I started Level Up Life, and a lot of what we do is work with students or families who have executive functioning deficits in the family, or even with just particular kids or members of the family, and see how that affects the family and approach it from a more holistic perspective. And of course, because of this, we see that there is burnout occurring either with these students or with families. Man, burnout's tough though. We see there's a lot of symptoms of burnout. You're looking at these and you might be like, yeah, I forget a lot of things. I'm always tired. I'm really depressed. There's a lot of these symptoms that come up. And so troubleshooting and diagnosing burnout is even tough in the clinical world. There's a lot of things that get mixed up with it. I'm going to talk primarily about depression and burnout, how to discern between these two, because these two get mixed up the most. So depression, there's a lot of symptoms that have crossover. There are things like, man, I'm feeling like I don't have control or power in my circumstance or context. Your mood can feel down or muted or even gray. You might feel neutral, where you don't feel really any type of emotion. But the biggest trait here is called anhedonia. This is where you feel a loss of pleasure in things. There will still be things we'll talk about today where if you've come here and you thought it was burnout, but turns out, like, man, like I actually feel like there are things I used to enjoy and I don't enjoy them anymore, you might also be experiencing some of the depression here. But burnout, while you might experience some of these elements of depression, some of the biggest traits here are cynicism. You might used to enjoy working with other students or people in the community, but as you got more burnt out, we start focusing more inward. We're more cynical in a sense that people are out to get us, or if we don't protect ourselves, we will get hurt. And there's this element of where we become less empathetic toward others. This is actually a survival trait. This is supposed to happen, but this is really painful in a lot of ways. So this is burnout, and this is how it differs from depression. Burnout, when we hear a lot of the time, it sounds very negative, and a lot of the time it causes negative outcomes in our life. But truthfully, it's actually a mechanism that is positive. It's supposed to do something for us. When we start to burn out, when we do feel less empathetic, when we do disconnect from people, there's a piece here where we are struggling. And it's really hard to take care of whatever that problem is unless we do focus on ourselves. This can have unintended consequences, and we'll talk about minimizing some of that. But the function is there to help us change something in our life or some lifestyle adjustment that makes it so that we manage habits, manage routines, make different decisions or choices. But it's supposed to help with all of those. Primarily, it does this by closing these or helping us close stress loops. Let's talk about what that does. So, stress loops. Typically, these are opened up by cortisol. So, a lot of burnout is actually physiological. There's a lot of other conditions like depression that can be physiological, it can be mental, emotional, and then those interact with each other in some interesting ways. But with burnout, it's almost primarily, like clinical burnout at least, it's primarily cortisol that's overproduced. And when that happens after like 3 days, it starts to affect our body in some negative ways. And if it happens after like 3 weeks, it starts to become clinical. And I have parents in our company who are like, man, what if it's been happening for like 3 years? It's just chronic and ongoing, and it's intense and it's tough, and we never close that loop. I work with educators as well, and this happens. They go to work, and for many hours a day, they're struggling with that stress and they're trying really hard. And it happens as well when they go home. And so we have this loop that opens up, and it's supposed to be there. We're supposed to address it, but we can never resolve it. And so that cortisol keeps getting produced. It affects sleep, it affects appetite, it affects a lot of things. And so burnout makes it really tough physiologically, and that's some of the early signs on burnout. We can look at some non-physical signs, but if we're looking at physiological signs, typically we look at like sleepiness. We can even look at energy and fatigue. There are some other elements too, where things around food, getting sick, changes here. Don't even have to. Sometimes people have an increased appetite, but sometimes a decreased appetite affects it as well. But when you see changes in your body, these are early signs of burnout. Okay. However, with the non-physical side, we talked about the cynicism, but there also are elements like we might actually push harder into working, or we pull away from working. We feel like we don't get enjoyment in what we do, or we lose our sense of purpose. We get really fixated on like the day-to-day rather than the long-term vision of what we're trying to do. And sometimes we pull away from people. And as much as our brain wants us to connect, we're kind of hardwired to connect as humans, we struggle to do so. And those are some of the emotional and mental signs that are tough. Numbers are sometimes really exciting for a lot of people to talk about and go over. And while we can talk about a ton of awesome statistics, and I love talking about research as well. I'm a researcher. I teach at a university in Utah, and there's an element here where when you start to understand some of the nuances on burnout, there's a lot of things that I would say when you start to understand the numbers and you start to understand what's really going on beyond you and your circle, it can start to help you feel like it's common and it's more universal than you realize. And sometimes that can make it easier to overcome. So while we won't put a huge emphasis on the numbers, it is helpful to see and realize that there is a lot of information out there about how common the condition is. One of which I really like, this is actually a study done in COVID, but there's been some replicating studies since then, and so it's still ongoing, where parents of young kids, usually like 5 to 8, over half of them really struggle with burnout, and it persists and it stays for years and years. This started in COVID, but even though the stressors from COVID are going down, we still see the impact of just parenting young kids. We're not entirely sure why that burnout rate is so high, but it's still occurring. So half of you might still be struggling with burnout, especially if you have young kids. So there are lots of numbers we can talk about, but man, burnout or burnout symptoms are incredibly common. There are some studies that even go up as high as like 85% of you will experience clinical burnout at least once across your entire parenting career. So it's pretty high. All right. I do want to talk about risk factors briefly. Risk factors don't necessarily mean if you then develop this or attain this risk factor, like you become a mother, then it'll cause burnout. When you look at risk factors, this is a correlation, meaning if you fall into this category, this other one's also most likely to appear, but we don't know which one came first, burnout or motherhood. But look at these risk factors. You might find that you might check. I have some people that are like, yeah, I fall into a ton of these categories. The more that you fall into, the more likely you are to have a diagnosis of burnout. And so there are a lot of elements here where you can almost start to see warning signs even further out just by seeing risk factors. And you do this for other people too. When you see they have a lot of risk factors, you can start to assess and look early and see if they are going to struggle with burnout. There is an element here also where we did a study on burnout. This is for medical practitioners and mental health practitioners. But almost anything they thought was self-care, like going on a walk, listening to music, playing games, was helpful with burnout. The one exception was advocacy work. This was particularly common among therapists that would go out of the way to try and help clients. That was one thing that actually increased rates of burnout. A lot of you parents do a lot of advocacy work. And these are the that was like the one thing that people thought helped with self-care and helped with reduction of burnout, but didn't. But most other things that you might think help with self-care and burnout will probably help. So that'll simplify that. Okay. We went fairly quickly through what burnout is without a ton of ideas about game plans. So understanding how burnout might occur with other problems, these are called comorbidities. Depression is a really common one. Suicidal ideation is another common one, or addiction. Knowing these goes a long way, right? Mental health professionals can help with that. And when you are treating burnout, you don't have to treat all of that. Even treating one of these doesn't even have to be the burnout. If you're treating the depression first, sometimes that burnout starts to go away by itself. Solving one problem at a time can be very helpful. But recognize that burnout is chronic. It's a lifestyle adjustment. So something in your life had slowly gotten you into it, and that means we have to make a switch and we can slowly get out of it as well. So let's talk about a model. It's a really brief model about what's in our control. I like this one a lot. It's from Covey, Stephen Covey. I actually use it in therapy a lot too, where we have this inner circle of what's in our control, what's entirely on us. And I have like the outer circle, which is the circle of concern. These are things that we cannot do, cannot touch, cannot work with. These are things that happen to us. All right. This might be things like genetics, or might be where you were born. You can probably move after that, but where you're born, you had very little say in that. Right. But then the circle of influence is where I like to work with people. And you might do this for yourself or for someone that you were concerned for that has burnout. The circle of influence is where you have some say, but also recognize that you're dependent on other people or the situation or environment to also react to that, right? Or vice versa. Something happens to you and you react to it. This is very hard for a lot of people because they might overweigh on their influence on a situation when really they might have very little, or they might put too much weight on something else, the other influence, the external influence. And they might actually have more control than they think. This one's tough. So working really hard in here, recognizing what you have influence over, whether it's a lot or a little, goes a long way in understanding how you can manage burnout. Okay. We covered a lot of the basics of burnout. Let's talk about the main thing. So this is a good time to start taking notes and getting ready. Let's dive in. We're going to start with one word. It's actually variety. And so and there's a lot of things and a lot of research. I've published a lot of research. And when you publish research on burnout, you know more than you ever care to know about a topic. And it gets exhausting to even work with it. And I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to manage burnout. And I feel like there's a human element here that is a struggle. And so I want to simplify it down to this one word. Okay, one more slide. Thank you. With variety, And understanding that one word so far, it does a couple of things for you. First, it tackles this element of trying out new things. We already are trying to make new change, but new things can cause a level of distress. Distress isn't bad, but distress is a big hurdle for people. But old things are also helpful for us. We're familiar with it. These are old tricks. These are things that are streamlined in our brain. Additionally, we want, I'm going to call it horizontal change. We'll learn more about what that means. But horizontal change is something that we're very uncomfortable with versus vertical change, which is typically an improvement in our life. These are what we often push for. And we'll talk about the differences and when you use them. And the more we build out plans, like even in both medicine and mental health, we can have very complex plans for change, but the more complex it is, the harder it is for someone to commit to it. And so we're committing to just adding variety into our life. So let's go over how it affects distress. Whenever we do something new, unless it's like really rewarding and really exciting, but if we're doing something new, it takes a level of effort and it takes a level of distress that we have to work through. Dopamine has a few key responsibilities, and one of them is a resource to manage distress. And so when we have to do something new and we want to use dopamine for fun and reward instead, going and using it for something that's distressing is rough when we could use something old instead. So learning to do something new is very helpful, and doing that more regularly and taking on, it could be a challenge, but also could just be something very simple, something our brain just goes, why are we doing this? Is very helpful. I'll give you an example. I had a client who would, as we're trying out adding variety, she would put pills into her little pill box a specific way because it would only fit that way. And then when she tried to add variety, she tried to find a new way to fit all of her pills in. And her brain would constantly fight against it because she already knew a way. And doing something new just kind of felt like a waste. It consumed resources. But this was actually very helpful for her in being able to start breaking down some of these habits. Let's go over how we can take down some of these old habits then. So, new patterns are rough. So, we feel distress. Dopamine helps us manage distress. Usually, this is due to an emotion like anxiety or dread. That's what causes us to not want to make that change. But that dopamine is really important to you to regulate that. Dopamine, I'm going to call it like a tonic level. We usually have a level throughout the day that kind of resets as far as how much dopamine we have. Especially the families that we have a lot of neurodivergence, like ADHD is very hereditary. You have multiple people in the family that consume the dopamine really early in the day and they use it for rewards. Okay. Dopamine also manages like motor activity. So if you're very hyperactive and you're bouncing a lot, it also can consume some of that. So what happens is when you're trying to do something new, and especially if you have something like ADHD, your brain does not want to use that dopamine to just regulate something. You have an old pattern that already works. Why are we breaking away from it? Why are we redoing the pills in our little pill box? So we want to practice being comfortable with it. We may not even have to regulate and feel comfortable with distress. Getting to the point where we can just feel it and do nothing with it is great. This is a novel idea to a lot of people too, a lot of my clients especially, where we sit there and feel distress but do nothing with it. It's very tough to do, but it is one way you can manage it where you don't have to use dopamine. So variety can help with that. We talked about a way to do horizontal versus vertical change. Let me define this further for you now. Horizontal change. We make a change in our life. Let's say we're trying to improve our health. We do something oriented around health, but it doesn't actually improve health. We make a change around our health, but it doesn't actually improve it. That's horizontal. Okay. When we make this change, I actually want to push for this. Okay. And I might improve other aspects of our life, like the benefits of implementing variety into our life, but it may not improve the health benefits. Vertical changes, you can make a change in your life, you can get the benefits from adding variety, but you also get the benefits from improving these health aspects. Let me go over some examples, and this next slide will show it to you. So they're both good, and they both have a lot of reasons, but we as humans love the vertical changes. We love the idea of taking something that we are falling short on or are very excited about and just improving on it and seeing that capacity grow into potential. We love that. It's very painful. to make a change that almost seems like a net zero, net negative. But I would almost encourage you to try that. This is actually one of the key things we do with variety. If I have a longer workshop where I'm working with people, I do like a lot of workshops with parents in person or educators in person, and we'll do an exercise. We'll talk about what is something you want to change and what do we do about it that doesn't actually improve that situation yet, other than add variety. Here's some examples that come up. People order food and they order like a different meal. I order the same meal everywhere, but you order a different drink. The example here is Dr. Pepper instead of a Coke. Roughly the same amount of calories. You might prefer it less. And if you want to improve your health, it changes almost nothing other than we're breaking those habits. We're facing that distress. We're making an intentional decision. We're not going into autopilot. I've had people that take their dogs on a walk and their dog almost like knows the route they're always going to go. And so it takes a little bit of extra effort for themselves or for their dog to like take a different route. You go ahead and do that as well. There are these other examples I have listed here, but the main idea here is you want to improve on something, actually make a change on it, and don't improve it yet. You want to change your sleep schedule, change something about your sleep where you don't go on autopilot, but you don't actually have to improve it yet. Practice on adding variety and being content with variety. That is more than enough, especially when you're managing burnout. Sometimes you don't know what needs to change. You just know you're exhausted, or you know that you need to connect with people, but you don't know how, don't know what to do. Just adding some variety is fine, and it can be a total change. That's horizontal. That's enough. When we can be content with that, and it doesn't have to be a strict upgrade, it makes it so that any change is much easier to attain. And suddenly, it's not just us, but other people, when they're making changes, we're actually more accepting of that too. That's not the main focus for this workshop. If you're working with your kids or spouses, other family members who are struggling with change, it can actually allow us to be much more patient and allow us to be much more okay with them experimenting and falling short and not necessarily always making that vertical change. And so in our company, we do the same thing with students who are trying to make some sort of adjustment. They can just do any kind of adjustment as long as they are trying, has huge benefits. So it changes it from an output-based approach to an input-based approach. We care less about the outcome right now. We care more about what are we trying to do? Are you making efforts? And then when it comes to managing habits, sometimes I'll have people like write down how many habits you have each day. What do you usually go on autopilot for? And they might start with like five or six. And as they start to notice these horizontal changes, like what can I do that doesn't quite improve my life? They'll notice more and more, and they're like, oh, I order the same drink. I put the same shoe on every single day first before the other one. And then they keep going, and they're like, man, I have like 30. And then some research actually says we have like over 170 that we do each day. There's probably more, but 170 that we can consistently track. And so when I tell that to clients, they're like, oh, there's probably more I'm missing. So really, you start to be aware of all these other things you do in your life that affect you, and you might be able to find ways to improve your life more beyond that.
Can you see that on your screen?
I just went to the next slide. That's it.
Okay. Do you want to be on that slide or the previous one?
This one's great. Oh, one more.
Okay, got it. I just
Thank you.
actually wanted to have I wanted to chat a moment because one of the things that I think that you're saying is kind of crawl before you walk and walk before you run. And one, I call it turning the knobs, like just a little bit. We're tweaking it. We're small improvements or baby steps to get to the end game. The end game doesn't happen overnight. Is that in a nutshell
Yeah,
what
it's
you're saying?
basically like that, but instead of like crawling, it's almost like turning in place. It's almost like, what are we willing to do? So like the Coke to like Dr. Pepper example, it's like really a net zero gain in like calories. It's the same if you're working on that. But your brain does way better at accepting future change when you're able to at least make a change. And when you recognize it doesn't have to be an improvement, you don't have to sacrifice a lot in your life, but you're making change and you do this consistently in your life, it makes all future change easier. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's really tough at first for people because they can tell that that output hasn't changed, but their brain does start developing those networks.
So I just have one more question
Sure.
before you move on. But where do you start? So if you have a kid that is ADHD, maybe they're on the autism spectrum, there are a lot. Like, so if you are talking to a parent, which you do, there are a lot of things that may be amiss or need improvement. So how does one know where to start? Because you're talking about very beginning, very baby steps. How do you prioritize on the list of things that need improvement? How do you prioritize and get started?
Yeah, we'll talk about by the research a little bit later some of the key points. I'll mention now that when it comes to burnout, sleep is going to be near the top of your list. If you just had to pick, like, hey, I'm open to anything and I'm willing to change, I've practiced all sorts of things, reducing that cortisol production is going to be huge when it comes to burnout. But if you're struggling to even make changes, it really comes down to what you would be motivated to do. So there are some kids where I'll even say, like, play a different video game, and even that's hard. They want to go to the same game, but playing another game, they like games, they'll still have fun, but they feel that knee-jerk reaction. So what I usually will tell people is when you try and make that change, it's not a big enough difference unless you feel that distress. If you make a change and it's just as big, you take that turn on the walk and it's not a big deal. Not quite enough, but when your brain feels that twinge of like, ooh, why am I doing this? I could have just done what I usually did. Or your brain goes, why am I doing this? It feels like the outcome's not going to be any better. That is when you have to work through that distress. And that's what we're looking for in the brain. If you don't feel that little bit of distress, it's not quite enough. So if you're working with someone who just needs to do some change, you're looking for some level of distress they're willing to take on. Which is why even like driving a different route home, a lot of people are willing to do that, but their brain will go, why are we doing this? That's what we're looking for. It's a very, I really like this question because it's something that comes up all the time with my clients. It comes up all the time in workshops, and people almost want to prioritize, but for now, you can pick almost anything. We will talk about specifics. The research does point in a certain direction, but for humans, sometimes we'll just pick the things we want to do anyway. Okay. We'll talk a little bit more about writing in a bit. But assuming that you do get to the point where variety is very easy, and now you're just like making a lot of changes, we'll talk briefly about what you do after that. Oh, sorry, forward, two slides. One more. Thank you. There will be a point of forming habits again. We've already talked about how this habit formation, the stubbornness humans have, it's not evil. It's actually okay. There's a part of here that's for survival and efficiency. When you find something that you like, where your sleep is improved, you're more empathetic, you're less cynical, you keep doing it. And the weird cycle is we're actually going to keep breaking it and redoing it, and we're going to keep doing that. One more. Thank you. I'd like to use the word, sacred when it comes to building a habit or a routine where we really try and make sure that these series of behaviors occur together. We'll talk a little bit about why. We want them to come together and we want them to stay as a cohesive set of behaviors. And that's really great for our brains. If we find something we like, we try and do that. And it is okay if this falls apart and we break it up when we try again. We form a set of habits around exercising. Suddenly, that becomes really easy. We now have to amp it up and do something new, and that becomes very easy. And we amp it up, or we get injured, and we try something else. It's totally okay. But again, the habit of when we like something, we try and protect it. Very fine. And this can make it so that when we try and do that thing, the distress involved is lower, which means we require less emotional resources to manage it. All right, we're already getting used to having to fight through distress, which is great. But now it requires less to even do it to begin with, which is wonderful. Okay, next slide.
We do have a quick
Sure.
question.
Yeah.
It says, what actionable steps could a parent take when they don't have a support group to help?
Oh, this is. So there are some theories in therapy where they'll say almost all injury comes from relationships, may or may not be true. There are things like TBI or ADHD you're born with and you die with. But there are some people that talk about like where are the relationships in your life? And then by that same thought, it's all healing comes from relationships. Now, whether you fully adhere to that philosophy, I do like the idea of when we approach problems, connection actually does heal a lot. There are some of those niches, though some of those exceptions, like ADHD perhaps, where you do have to take some neurological approach still. But I do still like the idea that humans, we want to connect with people. And so when you're there and you're stuck and you don't have a way to connect, and that's the way you want to improve in your life, that might be the place where you add some variety. There are certainly, I mean, you certainly can start with something like therapy, even though it might be a paid service or it's through insurance. That kind of relationship with a good therapist can go a long way. But some people feel like when it comes to mental health care, it has to be a professional. There are actually some awesome support groups. They're not always run by a professional. Sometimes they're just run by someone else in the same boat as you. And that's sometimes better, actually. Sometimes you need that more than a professional to just see how common these issues are. I talked about the research, and when you understand the numbers, it can help a little bit. When you're there in front of like five other people, 10 other people who are sharing the same story as you, it can go a long way. And as humans, we have a hard time taking like these abstract ideas and implementing them. We do much better with really simple ideas. When we have someone in that group that tells us like something that worked, we can get really excited about it and use it. So there's a lot of ways we can connect with people. I would say experiment. I can provide certainly like a list of ideas, but it's okay if it's a professional. And it's okay if it's a support group. And it's okay if you go find something fun and find a group of people doing the exact same fun thing as you. These are all valid ideas.
Someone said that support groups have been saving grace for them, and
Oh,
I
good.
have seen like group of like kids or teenagers, younger kids, maybe girls, maybe boys, maybe they're co-ed, where that has been helpful too, because the kid themselves sees that they're not alone. It's not just them. They're not the weird kid. There are other people that struggle. They're not the only one. And I've seen some good things out of those. Some of them, they're kind of few and far between. You have to find them. You have to look hard. They're not free typically. You typically have to pay for these groups, and they usually run like, they might run 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, or something like that. They may have summer programs or weekend things. So do check those out. And is there any particular website, Ryan, that you recommend where a person could search for groups like that?
To search for support groups, I'm not sure because I usually contact like a clinician in my area. Usually there's different clinicians. There's like MFTs, marriage and family, there's CMHCs. That's what I am. We're very good at one-on-one clinical work, but types of social workers, they specialize in community work. And so they are better than I at finding people in the community to get you resources. And they also work in like hospitals, and hospitals have a ton of support groups, and it doesn't have to be just medical. There's a lot of support groups that are run at hospitals for free for these type of things. So I usually just contact, if someone contacts me out of state, I actually go to a social worker in the area, like a hospital in the area, and I'm like, what free resources are around you? That's what I typically do, but I usually try and go direct to these groups rather than online. I saw someone throw into a chat some websites already, which I really like. Some of these are very popular websites.
I
I'm really
agree with
appreciative of
that
that too.
too, Nami and Chad.
Yep.
Nami has all kinds of groups. Some meet in person, some meet on Zoom. They're all across the country. It doesn't matter where you are. So there are a lot of resources. And if your child is on the spectrum, you might look at Autism Speaks. There's a lot of autism support online and on Facebook and other places where you can learn about groups as well. And then one more question, and then we'll keep moving. Because we always want to be courteous of everybody's time and end on time.
We'll be fine.
A person says, when I try to branch out and connect, it gets overstimulating. I end up self-sabotaging connection opportunities. It feels like a chore to socialize and burnout. I end up feeling bad, but I still desire to connect. What are ways that I could come out of this cycle?
Okay. I love this. Now we're looking at this as like that vertical change. It's like I go from no social connection and like no stimulation to now I have this connection, but it's also very stimulating. There's a trade-off there. Like, well, yeah, I get the connection, but also I lose a lot. It's very exhausting, or I come back maybe more physically burnt out because I am stressed, that cortisol production, right? We're trying to minimize that, not increase it. And so when it comes to this, really do simplify it down to variety. How can I just do it differently? And it does not have to be an upgrade. And is it shorter time? Is it less people? Is it different people? And be content with that. We get really hung up on outcomes. Focusing more on if I'm making an effort, win, high five, you did it. But really be content with that. But if we are looking for just like research-based outcomes, that honestly can be enough. The overstimulation, there are some disorders that are really sensitive to that it's hard to train and practice with it. But a lot of the time, you actually can work and develop skills around some of these, let's say, social skills or emotion regulation skills that can work with both of those, like connecting with people and overstimulation, that can make it easier as well. That's not really the theme for today either, but that's absolutely something I can answer for you if you email me afterward.
Ryan, I just wanted to mention too, like from like a business networking standpoint, you go to a chamber of commerce, networking event, and you see people going around and they're literally handing their card out to everyone, but they're not having a meaningful conversation with anyone. And so when I think about what the person put in the chat box, I think set your sights on the whole crawl before you can walk of if I go to one of these groups, I want to have one meaningful conversation with one person. And then the next time I might have another meaningful conversation with another person. You don't have to connect with everybody. I think sometimes you walk in a room and there's so many people in there, you feel overwhelmed and like how to connect, but other people are feeling that same way. And so just starting with one works.
I just did a panel at FANUC. Some of you have probably been there, and I did it with other mental health therapists, and we talked about blending gaming and mental health. Like, how do we manage it? How do we integrate it into our life? And there are a lot of people that had some awesome ideas about well, I go, I'll hang out with friends, but I'll hang out with the pets, like away from people. Or I'll go, but I'll just go play my own game. And usually people are okay with that. When there's a group of people doing something, it's very easy to feel like we have to line up with them. But it really is okay if you go with your own agenda, connecting with that one person and that one meaningful connection. It doesn't have to even be really in alliance with what everyone else is trying to do. As long as you're respectful and you don't get in the way of what they're trying to do as well, it can go a long way. Okay. Thank you, Allison. Okay. I'll finish this slide very quickly and then we'll see what other questions come up a little bit later and we'll kind of answer them as a group too. That's wonderful. With habits, there's actually a whole presentation we can do talking about how habits are formed in the brain. But the main thing here is this phrase that's really easy to you hear this all the time in psychology, neurons that fire together, wire together. When you have a set of behaviors that occur together, that habit starts to form. And it doesn't matter if you've done it like two times in a row or three times in a row. Once that happens, it's more solid. And even if you take a break and come back to it, then it starts to form even more strongly. But it's better if you do it more often. But whatever it takes to get you to do that thing is great. A lot of people feel like it has to be intrinsically motivated. But people with, let's say, ADHD, they are like three times motivated by extrinsic forms of motivation. And they really, that's gonna be like their whole life. And it's okay. And it's like, it's money and it's like reputation. But that's what gets them to do things. You can actually live a pretty happy life by like looking around and trying to connect with people. And so just keep that in mind. It doesn't always have to be intrinsic in my core values. Whatever gets you to do the behavior will help with the habits. One thing to keep in mind is that people run into hurdles. Like, man, I build a habit, but what if I just like get stuck? This is also something we can spend a ton of time talking about. In our program, we do this a ton with students because there's two different kinds of resistance. There's this intentional resistance, like we tell the kid, let's work on homework, and they're like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to be here, and they like want to go play a video game. And then we have the other time where like, let's do homework, and they're like, I want to, but I just don't have the energy. I'm fatigued when I think about it. There's dread. There's anxiety. Those are the different kinds of resistance. For all of you, you probably experience both of these all the time. Where you intentionally avoid, you pick something else instead, or you intentionally try and do the thing but fail to start, or fail to finish, fail to follow up, we fail to complete. So let's go over an example of like unintentional. We have listed here, you want to do homework, but the struggle is like, I'm there and I just draw it out. I keep getting distracted. There's something here that gets in the way. What is it? There are different ways we can handle this. We could talk more about this if we have time, but the main things that we try and do are re-engineering the environment, is what I call it. We reduce the barriers to doing it. You don't have to increase your discipline or willpower, but if we're adding variety into our life, it really might mean finding the situation, the physical environment, but also could be the social environment. Like, who's going to be around? For me in college, I struggled with school. And so I was like, well, what would it take to get me to study? And I was inviting people to study with me. So if they saw my screen, I would feel silly not studying. But that was the way it would take for me, or that's what it took for me to get work done. And that's the environment I had to be in. It was a very social environment and in person. And that's what you can think about too. You don't have to necessarily increase willpower. You can reduce the resistance to the task. That's a good way to add variety. Intentional resistance is hard, because you might be at work and someone will tell you to go do something and you don't want to do it, or you don't agree it's a good idea, or it might be very unethical. You're like, I want to avoid this. I'm actually going to avoid it, or you're pushing away from it, but maybe I should, or maybe it is actually helpful. These are tough. The ways I like to push for this is typically a type of value assessment. It really might mean taking inventory of what you care about. And really, there's a quote I like by this economist, Thomas Sowell. Sowell, where he talks about how there's no solution, but only, only trade-offs. There are no solutions, but only trade-offs, where whatever you pick, you gain something, you lose something. This is what happens when you have an intentional point of resistance and you pull away, you gain something, but you lose something else. And if we do end up doing that thing we're supposed to do, or someone asks us to do, we gain something, we lose something. The value assessment kind of tells us, what do we care about? And when we gain something, is it higher on the list? And when we lose something, is it lower on our list? That's a good exercise to keep doing. If you feel like you're not really lining up with your purpose or value in life, that's a good thing to try. One thing to keep in mind is when we do start making change, and we usually, this is from a book, and I touches the survival line, but typically the research shows that we go above the survival line, like we start to feel good and we do better. And above that line, we then start to drop and dip. Okay. And it doesn't always go down to the failure line, but a lot of the time it goes low enough that we are not content with it. And we go up and down. There's this hedonic type of adaptation over and over. That failure is very tough, especially if it's reoccurring. Like, man, I've started this like walking habit 6 times. What do I do about it? When it comes to something new, it really is okay to recognize that the emotion for failing or falling short is not bad. It's not evil. We often look at some of these emotions as evil, like dread, or shame, guilt, grief, but all emotions are there to drive positive change. So if we can make sure we feel that emotion at the right intensity and in the right context, we're going to be good to go. Sometimes we feel the emotions and we still don't take action with it. That's okay. The first step is to feel those emotions and try to gauge if we're feeling it more or less than we should be. And if it's right at where it should be, we're doing okay. And when that happens, and we feel it and let it be there, don't run away from it. We don't push, don't pull, let it be there. Then you'll get better at not having to necessarily regulate it, and you get better at having to work despite it. Those emotions will then start to drive change and actually motivate you. Now, when I say motivate, I mean you actually generate those resources that will make it easier to work through distress, and you won't have to do much more about it. But that does mean you have to accept failure. So if you did fail, so you really did lose a job because you played video games instead. We have students that do that. Like, man, this sucks. I could have done better and I chose not to. Or they could have studied for a test and they barely failed, but they had they studied, they would have passed. It's okay to say, like, things could have been different. And there are other times where we fail, where really, based on that circle of influence, it's a circle of concern or influence, there's not much we could have done with it. Being very realistic about what we can do or could have done, and what emotions we should feel in response to that. Is it grief? We can't do anything with it now. Or is it like anxiety? Maybe I can still do something here. I just have fear. It goes a long way. But emotions are not evil. Make sure you feel them fully. dichotomies. Big sigh from me because these are not bad either. But we love to fall into traps of this. This is myself included. This is all humans, right? We love the idea of like black and white thinking. It's so much easier. And it serves us well. Like I teach a class at university and I want to be there on time every time. It's like everyone, all the students can be late. They can show up late and still get a lot from the class, but I need to be there on time or else maybe I'll get penalized. That might be like a more clear black and white thinking, but we often apply some of this reasoning to everything. Like I have to run every day. Or my wife is a nutritionist. She works at Level Up Life as well. And we had someone who tried to do, I can't remember what it's called now, a 65-day challenge, I believe, where you try and do all sorts of things like drink water, read a book, exercise. And she missed like one day, but she kept going. And that one day was like this black stain on her record. And she actually improved her life quite a bit. Thank you. I see that in the chat. Oh, yeah, 75 hard. Some of you are familiar with that. And you missed like one day, but you actually improved your life quite a bit. And you did a lot of input-based growth. But because of that dichotomy of like, you can't miss a day, it was really, really painful for her. But she actually had improved a ton and she couldn't see it. So dichotomies, not bad. But it can get in the way of identifying when we actually did have growth, and it can get in the way of identifying how we can grow. So just make sure we use it appropriately. So, overall, there's a lot of things we can talk about with variety, but it does address the dichotomy because now it's not a I have to improve, it's I can do this horizontal shift, and we don't have to do everything 100% perfect. And we can come back to habits. And we can build habits and break them down. Even if we like it and we ritualize it, it's okay to break it down and change it again. And it challenges a lot of assumptions about what we have to break, what is really okay, and what is really a neutral habit. And even though we feel distress around rearranging pills in a pill box, or why do we feel that way? It's just a natural reaction of the brain. It's nothing good or evil. Our brain just wants to keep things the way they are. So just adding variety goes a long way and making all future habits much easier to do, to change and attain. Okay. Some specific action items that we'll go over. So we went over a lot of concepts, and again, a lot of it centered around variety. Even my wife and I, my clients and I, our coworkers and I. The idea of just saying variety, like, hey, add variety, add variety. I'll do sometimes workshops like at a school, then a year later, I'll go back and they will remember this more than like anything else. The I add variety and I still do something different with my husband. Like every few weeks, we'll change this up. Very good. I love this. I will call this main quest, video game term. We have main quests and side quests. Main quests are the more mandatory things when it comes, and this is more by the research. When it comes to managing burnout, the big three. This is good for depression too, by the way. So if you're like, man, this isn't quite burnout, but this might be depression. Are they the same? These both work very, very well. Or these three very well for depression and burnout. Four, sleep. Sleep is probably going to be the biggest thing for managing cortisol production. Naps can help. Naps can help with like managing some fatigue. But really, a long, good night of rest that's undisturbed is going to be one of the best things you can do, which is like impossible for a lot of parents. It's really tough, especially young parents. We talked about how since COVID has even just gotten worse. It's not young parents, parents of young kids, I mean. That's really, really tough. So some options are sleeping cooler, a chili pad. They're kind of expensive, but it's like a mat that you put on your bed and it runs cool water through it. You sleep a lot better with that. Alarms, especially kids with ADHD, you'll find they'll set like two alarms, and once you set two alarms, you'll set a ton of alarms. It's because our brains are actually they're awake to an extent. They hear things, and they have to decide whether to wake us up or not. And once we start snoozing and sleeping through a couple of alarms, we start to do that with a lot of alarms. Now, any sound that sounds like an alarm, we just sleep through. So try not to snooze alarms. Try to make sure that you actually set the time you're going to wake up. You might miss some things in the morning for a while, but try that out. Those are big ones. And no screen time at night if you can avoid it. There's lots of different numbers out there. I usually say 30 minutes, but if you can do at least 15, that's pretty doable for a lot of people. Exercise, there's a lot of different ways we can go about it. But anyway, you can add variety, and I've seen a ton of awesome ideas, even from like wearing different clothes when you exercise or inviting other people to come exercise with you that normally you wouldn't invite, or going to a different gym. You have a membership for multiple gyms, go to one slightly further away. But anything you can do differently is great, even if it's not an improvement, different. And same with nutrition. I'll give you one example of something with nutrition where you don't have to necessarily change what you're doing other than bring some awareness to it. Let's go to the next slide. Oh, maybe I put a little bit later. I apologize. So, we'll come back to that. There's an element with nutrition that is really helpful in terms of being aware of food, but we'll see. I think comes back a little bit. Let's talk about the second main quest first, then. So this one, this is better. So the first one's great for first quest for like physical body. There's like sleep, exercise, nutrition. It's great when it comes to managing that cortisol production, but when you manage that and we are still depressed, or we still feel like we're struggling at work or having fulfillment, and these things are really hard for us, the resilience piece, managing a way of dealing with circumstances that are beyond our control, or even for the things that we have to make changes for that are very tough to do, these three are helpful. Meditation is huge. It's very painful. If you have ADHD, meditation is like torture. You're sitting there with no stimulus, it's tough. Therapy. Now, the research actually is kind of mixed on what this would be. Support groups, like I said, are actually better in some cases than therapy. They actually outperform therapy. Not every therapist would want to admit that. But depending on what you're working through, some level of like therapeutic support is probably what I will say is amazing. So try something along those lines. And then connecting with people. Now, the social connection, this will be the non-therapeutic connection. Find people to work with, find people to connect with. Do that. It doesn't really matter. It could be more family, or it could be a different way of connecting with people you already like. If you connect with them online typically, but now you meet with them in person once a month, great. Just find ways to add variety to these three. Okay. This is the example with nutrition I just wanted to share. So there's a sheet on the left that some people do where there's like a nutrition journal, and they'll do like all of it, and they're like, I want to make changes and I'm going to track everything I'm going to do. But instead, I just zoomed in on the part on the right of this sheet, where all you do is eat your colors. Some of you are probably familiar with this, where you look and you go, I just have to eat something red. I don't have to necessarily make it healthy. I probably won't count cold cereal or like Fruit Loops, like something that is naturally red. If you eat something red and orange each day, and you just do that, it's a really nice way where you don't have to think about nutrition other than just like, what am I eating? What colors am I eating? And then, should I want to make a vertical change, I can try and eat each of these. But there are simple things like this. And it's really nice. Actually, AI is getting pretty good at offering some initial recommendations. Even for, we try the AI for a lot of like mental health disorders, and it's really, really tough. But depression was the exception. If you're struggling with depression, AI actually does like a decent job of like giving you guidance on who to talk to, like what kind of therapist and what kind of research is out there. It's getting good with that because we've studied depression for so long now. And so if you're thinking about talking to a therapist with depression, just be like, who do I talk to? How do I know? How do I find a good therapist? That's really great. Okay, next slide. Side quests. So not mandatory for managing burnout, but you probably have other needs that are not being met when you're managing burnout. So at this point, when work suffers or home suffers, home life suffers, some of these other things come into play. Now we're not working out, and so chronic pain comes up, or we don't feel fulfilled at work, and so we're performing worse. Whatever it is, there's going to be another need. You can make it something fun, you can make it something very direct to the need and value at play. Whatever it is, work with that and add some variety to it. So that would mean if you take this on, you have a quest around your physical health, you have a quest around like the mental health and building resilience, and then find something else that you yourself care about that's unique to you and add some variety there. Okay. There was a lot of concepts we went over, and everything kind of tied back into add variety. Just do something different. And it doesn't have to be an improvement. I keep saying this over and over, and I love it. And even when I do in-person workshops, people can get really hung up on it. So I do feel like I have to keep reminding you. And part of that's because burnout, is fine. It's not an evil thing. You didn't do terribly when you feel burnout. There might be some consequences in your life, like maybe you did lose a job, but that burnout itself is there to help drive change. It's trying to help you. Allow it to help you. Don't shun it. Don't feel shame for it. That is the thing that we need in our life. Recognize that there are some warning signs there. There are those risk factors, but there are also really that cynicism and lack of empathy. If those start to go down, and you're typically like a caring person, or you'd like to feel what other people are feeling, you might see that burnout is increasing in your life. All right. Find out what you can do in your life, what you can add variety to, and what you can change, and really add, especially to the physical health, one thing, the mental health, one thing, and see what else you care about. That's it. Add variety.
Ryan, one of the things that I think about is, I mean, add variety, but self-care, because, professionally, I work with special needs families all the time. That's what I do. And I never have to tell parents to think more about their kids that have disabilities because that's what they do. They think about them all the time.
Yes.
They eat, sleep, and breathe it. It's every fiber of their being. It's why they work. It's what drives them. It's all of those things. But what we do have to remind is self-care. And it's that one little thing, whatever it is. Do you enjoy a book? Do you enjoy a walk? Do you enjoy a bath? Is it a spa day? Is it, maybe it's the gym, whatever it might be. Maybe, if you're a dad on here, maybe you go to a car show with a friend or something, something that you enjoy. It's just something for you. It's not thinking about the kids or anybody else. And I am a special needs parent too, and I would say that I became laser focused on that probably back in 2020, and stress levels just really went way down. Whenever that's it's like a line item on your to-do list of self-care instead of it not being on the list at all or being the last on the list that you absolutely never get to. Of being intentional on that. And then everything else flows better. And it's not being selfish. The thing is if we have a kid that has a disability that is going to have care needs for the rest of their life, not just ours, our lives look different. Our retirement looks different if we have a kid that's going to live with us for a very, very long time. And so there's got to be some balance along the way. There's got to be some respite. There's got to be some peace. And I just would like to say, don't feel bad about doing that, but be intentional to do it, and you'll be happy you did.
Some of the research suggests that you need about 3 to 5 hours a day of self-care. And I feel like when I tell that to parents, they're like, I can't find 3 to 5 minutes. They're like, hours? That's tough. And so when it comes to burnout, reducing that cortisol production is great. So aside from the advocacy work that I mentioned, yeah, almost anything that you think is self-care would be wonderful to add in, however you can figure that out. And if you
It's
just
whatever
can,
it is to you,
yes.
for sure. And
Yeah.
some people, it's cooking or whatever it could be. Like there's, but being intentional on that, and if you have one takeaway of really thinking about that, if you're saying, because we always talk about on these ADDA meetings that the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. A lot of times, if one of the kids is ADHD, one of the parents may be, and so. There are bigger struggles going on there, but I think, working through those and paying attention to that. And then again, part of your plan is, I think about putting your mask on first, like when you're on the airplane, right? Like, if you're the be all end all for the family and you're twirling all the plates, you got to put your mask on first. Because if you're falling apart, everything else is falling apart. And so I think don't ever feel sorry for doing that. I think it's really important.
Absolutely.
Well,
Okay.
so let's just wrap up by this is your contact information, how you reach Ryan and everybody. I didn't say this in the beginning. This is being recorded. Everybody is going to get a copy of the slides and a link to the recording. So we will email that out to you. This is Ryan's contact information. And Ryan, at Level Up Life, do you guys take insurance? Where are you located? Do you work all across the US? And how do people connect with you? Do you meet in person as well as online? How does that work?
Yeah,
Tell us about
I'm
that.
glad you asked. We do therapy and only take insurance in Utah for therapy, and then everything else is private pay, and we have some ways of mitigating that cost and supplementing that. And so that's something we do across the country. We're technically international. We have one student in Canada, so we're like, we did it,
Okay.
but it's all remote and virtual, and so everything else you can do online.
Okay, awesome. Well, this has been really helpful. You had a lot of great ideas, and everybody, you can take his QR code and it'll take you to his site if you want to connect with him
Yes.
more. People may have had some questions on here that they didn't feel
Yeah.
comfortable putting in the chat box or whatever, and you guys can reach out to Ryan at Level Up Life as well. So thank you so much, Ryan. It was really, really
Yes.
wonderful information. We haven't done this, and I'm so glad that we did.
All
And
good.
thank you for everyone and your time tonight. And I hope everybody has an awesome evening.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. Hey, take care.
All right, take care. Bye now.
Bye.